elections and open a work session on executive appointments. Our first appointment is the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and that's Matthews. Tell us why you want to serve on this commission, please.
The Board of Directors of Oregon Health Sciences University.
Thank you. I was reading off script here. I'm sorry about that.
My name is Annette Matthews. I'm currently just beginning my third year of medical school at Oregon Health Sciences University. I did my undergraduate education at Portland State University, where I was student body president and also the student member of the Oregon State Board of Higher Education. I spent 2 years abroad at Cambridge University as a British Marshall Scholar, and I've spent 5 years working, or I have research jobs here in Portland. As a medical student, I've been involved in the American Medical Association student chapter, been president of that, and also an active member, student member of the Voice of Youth Curriculum Committee, which sets policy on curriculum for the School of Medicine at Oregon Health Sciences University. My interest in serving on as the student director on the OHSU Board of Directors is to continue this history of service that I have had since college. So I guess with that, do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I move the appointment of, I'm sorry, Annette Matthews. Excuse me, Annette. I move the appointment of Annette Matthews to the Teacher Standards and Mode. I'm sorry. Oregon Health. We don't want to try to get your teacher yet. Excuse me, just bear with us. Let's try this again. Mr. Chair, I move the appointment of Annette Matthews to the Oregon Health Sciences University Board of Directors to the floor of the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed.
Senator Tarnow has moved the appointment of Annette Matthews to the Oregon Health Sciences University Board of Directors to move to the floor of the recommendation the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Wait a minute. Hold.
Come on.
What do you do? What are you voting on?
Get a vote list.
No, wait a minute. You just say you're there for me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Look at the list. Appointment of Annette Matthews.
Oh, sure. I'm there.
Uh-huh. All right. Call the roll.
Senator Turner.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator
Cannon.
Aye.
Aye. I receive the necessary majority. The appointment of Annette Matthews to teach to the Oregon Health Sciences University Board of Directors is moved to the floor with a recommendation the appointment be confirmed. And we need to carry it.
I'll carry it, sir.
Senator Tarnow will carry it. And we thank you, Annette.
Thank you.
We open a work session on the appointment of John Child of the Board of Boiler Rules. New appointment.
Mr. Chair, I move the appointment.
We're going to have John tell us about it just before we move it.
Well, if you insist,
you might want to know.
You know, I got to go to conference with me at 1:30. I'm just trying to tell you.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I haven't a real prepared statement, but I did make a few notes here. I'd like to say that the Oregon Boiler and Pressure Vessel Law is one of the toughest in the nation, and within the 7 jurisdictions with which I work in, it is by far and away the strongest of standards, which is a plus to the state of Oregon for the safe operation of this equipment. The potential that this equipment, in terms of damage for dollars and life, loss of life, can be astronomical, given the potential nature of the equipment. I am an inspector with an insurance company operating within Oregon. I inspect in several locations in large industries, utilities, and manufacturing. I also want to represent my segment of the industry through the Oregon Board of Boiler Rules. the Oregon Boiler Law is intrinsic to our operations, and insurance companies represent the bulk of the construction standards, inspection standards, and operational standards of this type of equipment.
Okay.
And it's an important position that needs attention from our segment of the industry.
Very good. Questions? There's no question. I'd accept the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that you move the appointment of John Pyle to the Board of Boiler Rules. To the floor is a recommendation that the appointment be confirmed.
Senator Tarnow has moved the appointment of John Pyle to the Board of Boiler Rules. Move to the floor is a recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any more discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Tarnow.
Aye.
Senator Horton.
Yes.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Stone.
Aye. I receive the necessary majority. Appointment of John Pyle to the Board of Boiler Rules. Move the fourth recommendation. Appointment be confirmed. And we thank you, sir. Open a work session for the possible reconsideration of House Bill 2199.
Mr. Chair, I move to suspend the rule for the purpose of reconsidering House Bill 2199.
Senator Tarnow has moved to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering House Bill 2199.
Chair, is it disrespectful if one votes against such a motion?
Yes.
Well, then, Mr. Chair, I just want to let you know that can I ask why we're reconsidering why is this bill?
Yeah, let's
that's an awkward question.
I don't have the answer. I think it's
is there something wrong with the bill?
Yes, there's something wrong.
I thought the bill went out and was ready to go to the floor.
I think they want to lower the third
freestyle. That's got something wrong with the bill.
Okay.
Can I just be flat out to be honest with you what I heard?
Let me explain what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. First of all, we can't suspend the rules unless we got four votes to do it.
Well,
we can reconsider with self-majority, but we can't suspend the rules without.
Well,
and then you can't suspend the rules for.
You know, I hate to be obnoxious. You're going to hate me for life, but I can't help you, I don't think, because I think I know why we're suspending the rules, and I don't support what the intent is to do with the bill, which is to lower the amount of tax on the fuel. Is that not correct? Or is that what this is all about, or am I not?
That's not correct.
That's not correct.
That's absolutely not correct. I know how Democrats feel about raising taxes, but that's not correct.
The tax is going to stay exactly as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then why am I getting these funny looks from people? What?
Maybe you missed a call. Just say yes.
No, I'm one of them. What's the joke?
You're not calling me funny, are you? You're not calling me funny. I'm not funny looking.
Yeah,
it's
sure. Hard.
Is everybody on board or reconsidering this?
Yeah, on this point.
Didn't you practice take a vote?
No. You never came out. Don't you play? You've already took a vote.
You missed it. Where's our other member? I'll go get Brady.
Brady's not on. He knows that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first move. We will
is that your only objection, that you don't want to lower the tax? Okay, if we don't touch the bill and it goes at a later date?
Mr. Chair, I'll remove my motion to suspend the rules.
Senator Tarnow has withdrawn his motion to suspend the rules. We will move on to open a work session on Senate Bill. This, I need to close the work session on the possible reconsideration of House Bill 2199 and the work session on Senate Bill 1110.
Charles, they want me in one, room 160 on an issue. I'm not sure what it's all about.
Right now?
Right now.
Okay.
Is Peter going to come back?
Oh, eventually.
He said, yeah, he will.
Senator Byers on his way in.
I'll get back to him again.
Very good. Thank you. Well,
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1110 is a bill that was before this committee previously. It requires state agencies to disclose their intent to acquire real property to the owner before disclosures making it a person. There are -1 amendments that have been submitted for consideration of this bill, and they clarify the purpose of the bill. They require any purchaser of real estate to provide written disclosures to the owner of the property if there are any negotiations for the subsequent sale of the property to any state agency.
Right, Pete. And those are the -1 amendments?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I guess, since we're in a,
your name.
We're a subcommittee of the Committee on Rules and Election, and we're going to close the work session since we can't do a work session without the full committee. And we will look at pretty hard, folks, to run a committee when you don't have a committee. You may have noticed that, but I... problem. It's just...
Which one?
Here's the coordinates. 1110.
Okay.
We're talking about the -1 amendment.
What are they just saying?
The -1 amendment to Senate Bill 1110. Requires notification to seller of a property if simultaneous negotiations are going on to transfer the property to a state agency.
Vote that already.
I wouldn't do it unless they were.
Yes, that's going to be funny. Huh?
I see. I don't know that ODOT has weighed in on this. Please come forward.
Mm-hmm. I know you're in a rush, but I just...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Al Leitner with the Department of Transportation. I did review Senate Bill 1110 in its original form. I've not seen the -1 amendment. I did have some testimony prepared, and the portion about exchanging information, or disclosing information if we know of an exchange that's being planned, is something that is acceptable and we feel is fair. However, I've not seen the -1, but I sense that's where the amendments are going.
That's correct.
So your tummy says, without having seen it, but your tummy saying okay.
Yes.
Not the proportion.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, yes.
Okay, Mr. Atkins, yeah.
Okay, we'll reopen the work session on Senate Bill 1110. And I'd like to move the -1 amendment.
Okay, sir.
Senator Courtney moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 1110. Further discussion? Senator Barr, you understand?
Well, sir.
Yeah.
Is it okay?
Without objection to the order? Motion to move Senate Bill 1110.
meeting.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 1110 to the floor to pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Courtney.
What about Jeff?
Senator
Bice.
Aye.
Senator
Sanders.
Aye.
Senator Bice. Aye. I receive the necessary majority. Senate Bill 1110 to the floor to pass recommendation. Senator Ferrioli will carry. I need to open a work session on House Bill 3172.
First, to our members of the committee, House Bill 3172 had a public hearing on the 1st of June, at which time Representative Witt brought forward the Dash 2 amendment. It clarified system development charges may not be calculated based on the number of employees without regard to new construction, new development, or new use of an existing structure. That was his amendment, was the use of an existing structure. We also had testimony at the time from the Tualatin Hills Parks and Recreation District that they are okay with the bill.
Discussion?
Just trying to remember the bill. Amendment was brought conceptually at our public hearing, and we set it over so that this amendment might be drafted.
What is it? Is it an amendment, right? Is that what you're saying?
The Dash 2 amendment?
Yes.
From Representative Witt.
Mm-hmm.
It should be in the passage.
Did you hear from the cities or anybody else on this?
Yes, our members of the committee, no, we have not heard from the cities or counties.
Any representatives of the cities here?
Chair Starr, members of the committee, I'm Lynn McNamara from the League of Oregon Cities. We did not speak on the bill when it was presented. We did not take a position on it one way or the other. We don't think that SDCs are permitted to be charged when there is no new construction now, and Representative Wood's clarification of that was not a problem for us.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to know somebody.
Thank you very much.
God, it's great to vote in ignorance.
I'll move the amendment. Okay.
Yeah.
I move the dash.
Is he going to? No, go ahead. Do your thing.
All good. I move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3172.
Senator Shannon, let's move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3172. Discussion?
Sometimes I think, like at a wedding, if anybody objects, now I forever hold your peace. I wish I knew you'd do that sometimes, too. Things are moving faster, and all of a sudden I get beat up in the hallway, you know what I mean? I'm not telling you how long a committee is. Maybe one way it'll be.
There are no objections to order. You need to move the bill.
Oh, I move House Bill 3172 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Shannon has moved House Bill 3172 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
I want to make sure not the cities.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question of the city people?
We're just here.
I know, and I apologize, Mr. Chair, for being a little slow on the uptake here. I was trying to remember this one.
Okay.
Are you sure the methodology section, does this not get to the transportation fees, SDCs, with the employees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, not to the best of my knowledge, there, as far as I understand, there are some cities that include, use as a method of calculation new employees with regard to transportation SDCs, but it is always in conjunction with new construction or different use of an existing structure. And as I understand the bill, and again, I could be incorrect, this says without regard to new construction.
I think it's too hard there. It's been a while since I went through that, but I think it's okay.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byer.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Shane.
Aye.
Senator
Stone. Aye. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3172 is moved forward to do pass recommendation. Carrier? Carrier will carry. All right. We'll see you in a bit. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2052. This bill has several folks signed up. And we have John Marshall, Greg McMurdo, Marilyn McGlasson, and I think the representative star that signed up is on the House floor at the present time. Maybe we can move this without his knowing.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association here to urge your support of House Bill 2052 as amended by the Dash 3 amendments. We are undertaking what I would call in a kinder and gentler way a remove and replace. We are replacing the existing language of House Bill 2052 with the Dash 3 amendments. What we're trying to do here is remedy a very unique situation that a school district finds itself in. You have no doubt been inundated by calls from your own school district constituents urging adequate school funding and being told a variety of stories about the current financial circumstances of many school districts. What we have here is a situation that unfortunately due to a number of what I'll call financial missteps, this school district finds itself in a very unique situation, and that is a situation of having a negative cash balance at the end of its fiscal year. The district obviously could have resolved that situation by overestimating revenues and presenting a balanced budget. They chose not to do that. They chose to be more straightforward and honest with their community. Involve the community in developing a debt restructure plan. We sought and were successful in another amendment which gives the board authority to carry forward a negative cash balance. And what we're doing here with House Bill 2052 is setting up a program whereby the district can borrow some money over the next 4 years to get it out of this very severe financial circumstance. We're dealing here, although we couldn't so name the bank school district in these amendments, these amendments are intended to only apply to the bank school districts, and I want to make that very clear for the record. What we hope to accomplish with these amendments is to put together a work group of outsiders that will go in and analyze the district's debt restructure plan, assure that it's on the straight and narrow, and then make recommendations to the State Board of Education to free up these dollars over the next 4 years to allow the school district to get itself out of this very troublesome and unique financial circumstance. I think the amendments before you are relatively straightforward. You have a copy of a letter from Ms. McGlasson, the superintendent of the Bank School District, that lays out in chronological order some of the revelations that they've come to find in the school district and attempts that they've made to remedy those. Again, they have involved their staff, parents, students, the community, in a very straightforward way to try to remedy this situation, and the amendments to House Bill 2052 represent the last piece of getting them back on the path to financial security. We urge your support of adoption of the amendments and moving this bill forward. Ms. McGlasson is here if you have any questions regarding their plan and how they hope to get themselves back to financial stability. With that, I'll close and be pleased to respond to any questions.
Bill must be referred to raise names.
I'm aware of none.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I noticed in reading this that it says the district discovered that the revenue had been overstated by $510,000, and then it talks about this overstatement, and then the newspaper article that's been passed out says that the financial woes appear to be the result of poor management by the previous superintendent and the school board. Are these people bonded? Does the state have a place to go for this money if they're...
The district is examining those avenues by our attorney and by our insurance agent.
To see if you have some recourse?
Correct.
How long does it take to examine it?
How long have we known this?
Yes.
If I may respectfully speak, this issue started to...
Your name,
I'm sorry. I'm Marilyn McGlasson, superintendent of the Bank School District. I came on board as the new superintendent in July of 1998, last July. And within the first couple of weeks of taking that position, started to discover the financial situation that Mr. Marshall explained to you. At that time, I thought that the problem was limited to a $510,000 overstatement of revenue and proceeded to delete and expenditures to that amount, thinking I had controlled the problem, only to find out in January when the auditor's report came in that unbeknownst to the board or to myself, the district under the prior administration had finished the year with a negative fund balance of $906,000. So at that point, I had already cut $510,000, continued to make reductions, and to date have made $700,000 worth of reductions on a roughly a $6 million budget, or approximately 11%. Along with that, we have worked with a financial consultant to retire.
My question was, if I were there.
I'm sorry?
No, if I were there, I would call up the guy with bonding.
You bet.
Say, hey, we have a big problem.
Right.
I asked the question.
Right.
I was just saying, when did you ask that?
We asked that question right away in February. And
so it's taken them 5 months to answer it?
I'm going to be very cautious in my response right now because that's being dealt with through an attorney. And we're in some legal process now.
Okay. Evidently the answer didn't come back no because you're still negotiating.
Right.
Correct.
If there are no further questions, we're going to close the public hearing. Mr.
Chair,
we got.
I'd move the dash three amendments.
Senator Byers moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2052. Further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, Stewart.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2052 as amended to Ways and Means.
Senator Beyer.
Oh, with the DuPass recommendation, I'm sorry.
Yes. Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2052 as amended to the Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Aye.
I receive the necessary majority. House Bill 2052 is moved Ways and Means with DuPass recommendation. Open open a public hearing on Senate Bill 79. No, I'm sorry. We got a time certain on that one. We will move on to House Bill, public hearing on House Bill 2866. We have Stephen Kapori, Greg Price, Joel Smith.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, my name is Stephen Kapori. I'm here today representing the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon, and I have with me a member of our Legislative Committee, Joel Smith, to tell you about 2866.
Thank you.
Chairman Starr, members of the Committee, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Joel Smith. I have a consulting business in Redmond, Oregon. I'm a licensed engineer and land surveyor. In my spare time, I'm a member of the Board of Examiners of Engineers and Land Surveyors. I'm a chairman-elect of the Board of Directors of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. I volunteer my time as a Deputy County Surveyor in Harney County, and I'm a member of the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. I've also been for 4 years a member of the Legislative Committee of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. This is our second time in session. Last Saturday, the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon had a special meeting. At that meeting, over 80% of the members told us on the Legislative Committee to proceed forward with our legislation and to retain the services of our lobbyists. After that meeting, the Legislative Committee of PLSO met with representatives of the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. The purpose of the meeting was to listen to what the county engineers had to say about our bill. What I hoped was that we would hear a clear consensus, compromise position that we could all live with. Unfortunately, we did not. What we heard was that amendments were desired to the bill, which would, in effect, eliminate what we're working towards. One of the county surveyors put the issues directly in perspective. He said it's a control issue. Are the county surveyors going to be in control, or are the licensees, the registered professional land surveyors, going to be in control and responsible for their actions? The legislation, as we propose it, puts the responsibility where it belongs, and that is on the shoulders of the licensed land surveyor, who by statute has responsible charge and responsibility for the surveying work that he does. As a member of the Board of Examiners, or as a member of the Board of Directors of PLSO, I don't have a special license. I get no special credits. I get no special work. I took the same exam and had the same work experience requirements as everyone else who took the exam at the time I did. And the same goes for the county surveyors. There is no special license for being a county surveyor. We believe that there's a state agency charged with maintaining the quality of work that is performed by licensed land surveyors in the state, and that is the Board of Examiners of Engineers and Surveyors. I'm sure you'll hear the tired argument that Osbeals can't do anything. Well, I'm here to tell you that within the last month, we have a new law enforcement coordinator and law enforcement is moving forward at a rate that I haven't seen in the last 4 years. I believe, and I can proudly predict, that within the next year, the backlog of cases at Osgill's will be eliminated, and that Osgill's will become a very efficient and effective law enforcement agency. I'm here to ask you for your support of this bill prior to its amendments. I think that we have worked long and hard to try to put the responsibility where it belongs, and that's on the individuals with the license. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're in subcommittee situation since my committee finished. Appreciate it if you would stand by. We've got a few people signed up in opposition, I'm afraid. We may want to talk to you further after we've heard from you.
Be glad to be with us, sir.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We've got the representatives haven't shown up. So we, Tom Hamilton, Jim Marquis, Dan Lynchide,
Senator Stark, members of the committee, my name is Dan Lynchide. I'm the Yamhill County Surveyor and President-elect of the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. I've been a member of PLSO for 20 years, and I served one term as the Willamette Chapter President. This bill would correct some deficiencies, and we as a group of county surveyors have supported those changes. However, there are some sections of the A and Gross bill which we find unacceptable. One of our duties as county surveyors is to ensure that plats are correct mathematically and display certain minimum standards and give constructive notice that the boundary has been properly resolved. This bill erodes our ability to check on these matters on behalf of the public. The Oregon State Board of Engineering of Examiners of Engineering and Land Surveying is also charged with protecting the public via the licensing process for surveyors and engineers. They currently are processing 10 complaints that were initiated more than 2 years ago. Their law enforcement section has a large backlog, and there is no reason to believe that this would improve if county surveyors began filing more complaints against private surveyors for filing surveys and plans displaying errors or omissions not covered under ORS 209 and 92. About 40% of the license renewal fee we pay to Osgill's each year is spent on law enforcement, and our licensees will double next year primarily based on these complaints. We take our oaths of office very seriously, just as you do. This bill would strip us of some of the ability to protect consumers. We have had at least 3 meetings with the PLSO Legislative Committee since January to resolve our differences, all to no avail. At our most recent meeting on Saturday, they told us up front they really had no interest in seeking a common solution to our concerns. I find this particularly frustrating. We submit Amendment A4, and it might have a different, yeah, that's the hand and gross one.
A4.
Okay. For your consideration, the County First Amendment to this bill we also support, and we request respectfully that you give fair consideration to ours. I was at the Saturday meeting, Senator Starr and committee members, and I had a completely different perspective on it. After a few minutes, I could see which way the
meeting was going, and I asked the question, and I said, are we working toward an amendment that could be submitted in time for legislative council to get it to this committee in a timely manner and it could be heard? And the answer was no. Absolutely. They were there to listen to us. And so with that, it just kind of took any chances for resolving this. It's gone as far as I said in there. We just said no. That's it for me. Thanks.
Any questions?
Senator Starr, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Pearson. I am the Clackamas County Surveyor. I also do some private practice, so I kind of sit on both sides of the fence. I believe there's a letter being handed out, and there's also a map. Our opposition to this bill lies in three distinct areas. We have, and as Mr. Lynchheid said, worked with PLSO. We met sometime several months ago. Walked out of the meeting feeling fairly good that we'd reached a compromise and that we could take this bill jointly to the legislature. And in reality, we found out later that nothing had changed. After the House hearing, we were directed by the committee chair to go forward and get together and work out our differences. I set up a meeting at my office with representatives of PLSO. They did not show. I called them. It was for a 1 o'clock meeting, and I called them about 1:30 and said, where are you? And they said, well, oh, we weren't going to have a meeting unless we could agree that we could represent PLSO and do that. And that wasn't my understanding. So that was a little communication, but they did not show at that meeting. And I was not at the last meeting of Saturday. As you can tell, I'm moving a little slowly these days. This is really being pitted as a county surveyor, private surveyor type of an issue, and it's not. As county surveyors, we are charged to protect the rights of the public. And if we don't protect those rights, then we aren't doing our job. Frankly, there are some private surveyors that are not as competent as others. Many of them are very, very competent, and they submit work that usually just goes right on through. Many times we have surveyors that plain don't know how to survey, and they completely do things that are in the worst interest of not only their clients, but in the abutting property owners. I don't know if you got a copy of a map. Did you get? One of the issues in the bill is currently under Oregon law, and this is a copy of an existing subdivision plat that has recorded in Clackamas County. Subdivision plats are very, very complicated. This is page 5 of 9 pages. So you can imagine the difficulty that goes into these, and there's a tremendous amount of work that is submitted on behalf of the private surveyors. They do, for the most part, they do a significantly good job. Under current law, all of the monuments for the lot corners on the interior of the plat can be delayed and set after the construction of the streets and the utilities is completed. Professional land surveyors of Oregon are proposing to, on the exterior boundary, which is required to be set now, to only set the angle points of that. And if you look at the map, on the bottom of the map, I have two orange dots here that would represent the two corners that the private surveyors would set under their provision. All of these circled monuments in green would not be set. Our objection to this particular provision of the bill is that when the private surveyor sets his boundary in the field, that serves as constructive notice to the property owners that this is where that surveyor thinks that it should be. If there is a problem, if the private surveyor disagrees with the existing property that's already there, and in some cases, we've seen examples up to 20 and 40 feet. But imagine, if you will, that, Senator Starr, that you live in lot 21, and those monuments were not set, only the orange ones were set, and the plat records, they sell, and I'm referring to lot 21 south of the line with the green circle, they would sell lots 151 and 152 to somebody. The plat monuments still have not been set because they've got up to a year to set those.
And lo and behold, they finally come out and set them, and you see that they set that monument 10 feet into your yard. And now all of a sudden there's a problem. And we've got a problem because the plat is recorded. We can't change the plat. If those monuments were set at the time of submittal of the original plat to the county for review and approval, and you saw it was 10 feet into your yard, you could call up the surveyor's office and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong out here. There's something going on. We need to see what's happening. And we could review that and get together with the surveyor, and they could understand that, yes, there's a problem, and we need to resolve it, and we need to get this thing situated and resolved before that plat records. Otherwise, you're going to end up in a court with a lawyer making money, and you're going to lose money because you're going to have to hire an attorney. The second thing that we disagree with is in Section 6 and changing the approval requirements for partitions. The Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon only want us to check for technical requirements as listed in ORS 209-250, and those things are such things as scale, date, north arrow, surveyor's name, surveyor's address, and the provisions of Chapter 92, which means they have to have certain monuments set and they have to show certain easements. If we were to look at this particular subdivision and we were to discover on our own that there's a 20-foot or 10-foot encroachment into an existing development, we would say to the surveyor, you need to talk to your developer. You've got a problem that needs to be resolved before we approve this plat and before those lots are sold to the public. This would take away that ability. The third provision that we're objecting to is, under current Oregon law, a surveyor, but from the time he sets the monument or they set a monument, they have 45 days to prepare and submit a map to the county for filing. This is a public record. This is what governs land sales, and title companies rely on it, surveyors rely on it, land use people rely on it. They're proposing that they would just arbitrarily be able to delay that 180 days at their discretion without any oversight, without any saying, gee, I've got a problem and I need some additional time. Our -4 amendment would allow an extension up to 180 days if a surveyor would come to the county surveyor and say, I've got a problem, I can't get this in, and here's why. And we've done this informally in the past. I don't know anybody that has ever said no. I'm sure in some situations there will be somebody that will say no. We also, in our -4 amendments, are proposing on the exterior monuments that if they are subject to destruction, that they could be delayed. It would be a permissive thing. They're coming basically to the governing body saying, and whether it's the county surveyor or the planning department or the board of commissioners, saying, I can't set these monuments now. Here's why. Can I have some extra time? That's not an unreasonable thing to ask. And the third thing is the approval thing. We're just absolutely flat out opposed to that. If we can't look at things other than date, scale, north arrow, then all we become is technicians, and we aren't professionals reviewing things. If you can imagine the bridge not being reviewed by a professional before it's built, I think you could see that's kind of a far example, but it's the same thing. Surveyors make mistakes. We catch a lot of those mistakes. We resolve them with them, and we come to a satisfactory solution in most of the cases. Some cases, there are some problems between county surveyors and private surveyors. We have in place, approved by our organization and by the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon, a dispute resolution process. It's been approved by both groups that if I, as a private surveyor, have a problem with Mr. Lynchide, I can say I want to use the dispute resolution process, and we have already agreed we would be bound by the results of that. There's all kinds of mechanisms in place to solve these problems other than poorly thought out legislation. One of the things the legislation does in Section 7 on the delay of 180 days calls for a temporary map. I haven't got the foggiest idea what a temporary map means, but I can guarantee you that in 36 counties in Oregon, there's going to be 36 definitions of what a temporary map is going to mean.
and we're going to have arguments between private surveyors and county surveyors about what it is. I heard one private surveyor say, I'm just going to turn in the tax map and say, here's where my survey is. Well, that's not good news. But there's lots of other things that can happen. But it's not well thought out. We've asked them to delay this until next session. We said we'd be happy to work with you. Let's see what the real problems are. So far, we haven't seen any problems. We've only seen solutions, but we haven't seen the problem. We need to see the problem if we as public officials are going to resolve it. And that's what we are as public officials, and we're working in the best interest of the public. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Questions? Two representatives have taken themselves off the House floor. They need to get back there, so if you will please
make that one conceptual amendment, too.
Mr. Chair, we had one conceptual amendment on page 3, line 7. When we turned into LC, our proposed, which is now the dash 4, we had included on there that on page 3, line 7, we wanted to retain the existing words authorize the setting of and delete the word set. Once again, giving the discretionary authority to the county surveyor to allow them to set another type of monument. So I would like to get that in the record if I could.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yes, Representative King and Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Susan Morgan. I'm state representative from District 46, which is the southern part of Douglas County, northern part of Josephine and Jackson counties. And I serve on the Water and Environment Committee on the House side, and we had the pleasure of hearing this bill in that committee, and I also carried the bill on the floor. My knowledge is at a point where I haven't seen either the Dash A4 amendments or the Dash A7 amendments. But I thought that it may be helpful to the committee to step you through the bill as you received it before these amendments were offered up. We found this bill in Water and Environment to be extremely confusing, and it took quite some time to be able to step through it. Basically, what I found was that in that Section 2 says that any parcel shown on a partition that is not required to be surveyed and monumented must have the acreage of the parcel shown on the plat, and the word unsurveyed must appear next to the parcel number on the plat. So that section deals with unsurveyed parcels. Section 3, subsection 3, deals with a lot, on lot or parcel corners, surveyors may set another type of monument in circumstances where the setting of the required iron pipe or steel rod monument is impractical. On the ground, what this translates into is if you're out setting monuments and you're in a place where there's a lot of rocky outcroppings, or for one reason or another, pounding a 30-inch iron stake in the ground isn't a viable solution, there are a number of other ways to mark a corner, and this gives a licensed surveyor the option of choosing a different form of monumentation in those circumstances. Section 3, subsection 5, it says that all monuments on the exterior boundary of a subdivision must be placed where changes in direction of the boundary occur. The remaining monuments need not be set prior to the recording of the plat. The remaining monuments must be set by a date agreed upon by the private surveyor and the county surveyor. The person subdividing the land must furnish a bond to the county surveyor to cover the cost of setting the remaining monuments. From my experience with surveying out on the ground, it isn't uncommon at all under the current statutes. When a surveyor comes out, he's required to permanently set the boundary, all of the boundary markers on a subdivision plat before the plat can be recorded and the subdivision finalized. So when we go out there with our cats and our backhoes to start digging the trenches, to lay the lines and doing the cuts and fills, to landscape for the parcels, more often than not, we tear the permanent markers out of the ground. And so what this does is it allows the licensed surveyors the option of only placing permanent markers where the boundaries change direction, and then using, for example, orange top survey stakes to mark the other places, so that when we come in and work the ground, we aren't destroying their work and causing them to come in again and have to do it over again. The section 4, subsection 1, sets the amount of the bond for the placing of the remaining monuments. And what it says is that the bond has to be in the amount that is 120% of the cost of placing those monuments that weren't placed in the first go-round. Section 5 was a section that the county elected surveyor find to be very contentious. And this is the section that says that the surveyors, once the surveyor has, the private surveyor has submitted the plat to the city or county surveyor, the city or county surveyor shall only review the plat for compliance with the applicable parts of the statute that you're looking at and ORS 209.250, which, and what 209.250 says is that the plat map shall be checked for location of the survey by quarter section, township and range, the date of the survey, the surveyor's seal and original signature, the surveyor's business name and address, the scale of the drawing, north arrow, distance and course of all lines traced or established, giving the course to a monumented section corner, quarter corner, 1/16th corner, or DLC land claim corner in township and range, or to a monumented lot or parcel corner or boundary corner of a recorded subdivision, partition, or condominium, all measured bearings, angles, and distances that are used as a basis for establishing or reestablishing lines or monuments separately indicated from those of record together with the recording reference. And then it goes on to say that metric measurements can be used if a conversion to feet is provided, all monuments set and the relationship to monuments found, a detailed description of monuments found and set shall be included, and all monuments set shall be separately indicated from those found. This, to me, is a pretty comprehensive list of things that they need to check for, and I had real problems with tacitly agreeing to let the elected county surveyors exceed what they were statutorily authorized to do. My feeling in this case was that if they felt that there were other things that it was beneficial to be checked for, that they should come forward and offer amendments to add those things into the list so that they can be covered in statute. Section 7, subsection 1, currently surveyors have 45 days to submit a plat map to the county surveyor. The amendment will permit the surveyor to an extension of up to 180 days. The statement of extension must be given in writing to the county surveyor, include the reason for the delay, an estimate of the time for the submission of the survey, and a temporary map showing the position of any monuments. And then Section 7 relates to GIS system of mapping, and this, of course, is a new system that is coming in that relates to global positioning, and it establishes a uniform set of, I guess, a uniform process for recording the data that relates to GIS measurements so that all over the state they're recorded in the same way, and to ensure that there is a coordinated and standardized way of making adjustments in those readings to the curvature of the earth and those kinds of things. And basically, that was what I found that bill to be about.
Questions? President King.
Thank you. For the record, Al King, District 44. And it's my pleasure to be a co-sponsor of the bill and found everything that Susan has said to be valid. I wanted to be a part of this bill because it was one of my job experiences to be a surveyor for the Forest Service. And particularly Section 5, where we asked for, you know, all the markings to be put out in the subdivision, and then we would have the equipment come in and tear it out, you know, against, you know, subsequently. It seemed like it, you know, was an area that would be good to have some state standards in terms of you know, what was out there, in doing the work and not be you know, arbitrary in terms of whether one county was lax or, you know, another was, overly strict.
Thank you very much. Questions for the representative? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see. We had... Tom Hamilton didn't get testified before.
Good afternoon, Chairman Starr and Senators. My name is Tom Hamilton. I am currently an elected county surveyor for the county of Lincoln County. I've been a member of TLSO for many, many years. I've served as my chapter president. Also, I've been chairman of the board of TLSO and involved in committee hearings for legislation on survey matters for many years. And this is the first time I've ever been in a position that I find myself in now where the profession can't seem to get itself going down one road that's really good for the public. The proponent spoke earlier saying we all got our license the same, and that certainly is true. But there's a big difference between county surveyors and private surveyors. Private surveyors are certainly out there with the needs of the public in mind, but they're also there to generate a profit. County surveyors have to swear an oath to protect the public's interest. And that's where I have a conflict with this legislation, is as a county surveyor, I can't support what they're requesting here. I think that when I was elected to support the people, or represent the people in my county, they expected me to do more than check for north arrows and scale and dates. Right now, I have a staff out checking the subdivision where there's a major overlap on the plat, 4 foot for 1,000 feet, representing on the ocean, representing millions of dollars. The private surveyor didn't disclose it. And believe me, the owners welcomed my review of these overlaps and gaps, which might be outside of technical requirements. So my big problem here is there is a difference between what the county surveyors do and what private surveyors do. Specifically, there's three parts here that I find objectionable. I think amendments might well help. But setting the monuments on exterior only on a change of directions is not good for the public. When I go out as a county surveyor to look at the plat, if I only have the ones on change of directions on exterior, I can't see or tell whether there are these encroachments, easements, overlaps, or gaps. And in my county, Lincoln County, many times this occurs. The second one, that's 180 days, I've been a private practitioner for many years before and during while I've been a county surveyor, and I've never found a time when I couldn't get the plat recorded within 45 days after I set the first monument. This 180-day thing, to me, just doesn't make sense. For a surveyor to set a monument on private person's property and not make that public for 180 days, to me, is unreasonable. People need to know what's happened to their private property out there. And 180 days to me is too much. So I think that the PLSO effort and the county surveyors ought to get together and find a solution to this thing. I think the amendments being offered might do that. There's certainly problems on these boundaries. Earlier there was testimony that if you only set all the points on the perimeter, they'll just get tore out. Well, that doesn't happen in my county a whole lot. And if you set temporary wood stakes or anything else, it's just about the same amount of time to set the rod. So for me, I would like the law left as it is, or until we can find a better compromise than what we have.
Question? Senator Courtney?
I thought, sir, you said that the amendments to the bill would help the two sides get together. He didn't say that.
Well, I haven't had sufficient time to read all the things. There should be. I was just hoping that we could find a way for the two sides to get together, and I have not seen that occurring.
Okay, I didn't put words in your mouth. I just thought that. But then you said, that leave the bill, leave everything as it is, which means we wouldn't put the amendments in the bill. We wouldn't pass it. I'm just trying.
I'm sorry if I misspoke. I don't like this the way it is.
You don't like things the way they are?
No.
You want people to get together?
Yes. And I and what?
You want the bill and the amendments?
Yes.
Excuse me. I wasn't.
The bill, no. With amendments, yes.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry. Thank you very much, sir.
Charles Stern.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Chair. My name is Charles Stern. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk, and I chair the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee on Land Records. We have proposed the A7 amendment, so you know where that one came from. And one of the issues that the clerks have an interest in, I'm sure it's an interest that's been shared by others, is that as our customers come to us to record documents, there's a different standard of fees that may apply to different documents. In actions this legislature has already taken, we've expanded that the fee for the assessment taxation to include more documents than was currently being collected upon. This amendment would do the same thing for the land corner fee, that it keeps that in sync with those documents that are now being reflected by the assessment taxation fee. The estimated revenue to be raised by that is about $1.5 million for the surveyors for the establishment of land corners. And for the committee that may not be familiar with what these are, is that in past sessions, the legislature set up a program and a fund for the county surveyors to go out and reestablish governmental corners like donation land claims, section range, township corners, so that when the private surveyors come along and survey, they have good points to tie from. It's a valuable program that's used by private surveyors. And what this does, this amendment then keeps this program in sync with what is being charged in the assessment taxation program.
You're proposing a $10 fee?
No, sir.
I'm sorry.
What the bill does, what current law does, is allow the county governing body to establish a program. That's step one. We have two counties that haven't even established such a program. And then they may establish a fee not to exceed $10. And that varies from $2 to the $10 if you look from county to county. Multnomah County, which records most of the documents, has a fee of $3. So often $10 is used because that is the maximum, but that is certainly most documents in the state of Oregon are recorded at a fee less than $10. And this expands it from the current documents that are being covered, and that would currently, it's covered all documents in the deed and mortgage records. This moves it on down into the lien records, which is what happened with 2139, moved those fees down into the lien records. It creates some exceptions, including satisfactions of judgment, as exception to that fee.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Have Jim Markey come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Markey, on behalf of the Oregon Mortgage Bankers Association and the Oregon Collectors Association, I would limit my remarks to the A-7 amendments. We have no position on the rest of the bill and don't take sides in the argument between the private surveyors and the county surveyors. but we are concerned about the -A7 amendments proposed by Mr. Stern. Charles does a good job representing the Clerks Association, and I respect him immensely, and I think the clerks, generally speaking, across the state, do an excellent job, and I represent people who do business with them on a daily basis. Mr. Stern, however, talks about trying to create uniformity, and I want to assure you there is not uniformity from county to county, nor has there ever been, and probably there never will be. And this $10 planned corner preservation fee is allowed to be charged by counties that, by ordinance, and they can charge up to $10. Well, in a couple of counties it's $10, and in some counties it's $3, and in other counties it's $4. There's a couple of counties that don't have an ordinance. So no matter what you do with this bill, you're not going to have uniformity when it comes to the amount of dollars paid by people going to the county clerk to record these instruments. But what I can tell you this bill will do is it will raise more money for the counties for this fund, and there's been no evidence brought to you that any additional revenue is needed for this fund. And certainly most counties are not at the $10 level, and if they needed more revenue, they could simply raise the fee in Multnomah County from $3 to $4 or $5 or whatever that might be. To my constituents and many other interest groups in this building, this represents a new tax on documents that it is not charged now. And primarily those would be liens created by the Oregon Medical Association, representing doctors who create medical liens, hospitals who create hospital liens, the construction contractors who want to file construction liens, people who want to record a lien record abstract or a certified copy of a judgment. There are many, many documents that this would be applied to under these amendments that it is not presently applied to. And most of those documents under present law, there's a $5 per page fee for, and under current law, most of those liens are one-page documents, so it's a $5 fee to record them today. Under 2139 that you passed earlier this session, you created an $11 surcharge on those documents, so that $5 fee has gone to $16 effective next year. If you pass this amendment to this bill, that $5 fee will turn into a $26 charge on those documents. And that will be charged when the lien is filed or recorded, and it will be charged when the lien is released. So it will be paid twice. Each time a lien is filed by a construction contractor, by a medical doctor, by a hospital, by any of those people I mentioned. So that's a total of $52 in and out. And I just think that it's wrong to raise this kind of tax on people without their being heard. These similar provisions to this were contained in House Bill 3152. It was heard in the House Agency Oversight Committee, and the committee chose not to move it forward. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair calls Senator Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Starr. Members of the committee.
Member of the committee.
I'm Senator Bill Fisher from Douglas County and Josephine and Jackson County. I am not versed in surveying, but I spent about half an hour going over this with my surveyor for Douglas County. Yesterday, he supports the bill, the A.M. Gross House bill, as it is, without any amendments. He's elected down in Roseburg in Douglas County for the very reasons that are in that bill, simply because people couldn't get things done in time. Surveyors would come in with plans and plats and different things, and they were delayed. They were given the runaround. They had all kinds of barriers to getting things done. It was slowing down construction processes. Some of those things become extremely important in the climate that we have and the ground conditions and stuff that we have in places in Oregon.
where it isn't as dry as others. If you're delayed a couple of months in the fall and get into the rainy season with your foundation work and things like that, a foundation prep, sometimes you're held up for a full season. You can't start to clear until things dry out in the spring. All kinds of problems that they were coming up with that this bill puts a stop to, or at least ameliorates. It bothers me always when our public officials determine mostly on their own of what's right and what's wrong instead of trying to help people get things done. And we had a situation down there in Douglas County that was very onerous to the surveyors. And one of the private surveyors was asked to run. He really didn't do much of any campaigning and was elected by a landslide because of the actions of the prior surveyor that had had no private surveying experience, and it was causing the problems. I haven't had one complaint in the last 2-plus years now since he's been operating the county surveyor's office, and things seem to be getting done properly. They're being done right, but they're being done in the spirit of cooperation with the individuals that are in private business and that have to deal with that agency and that department. And to me, we need to do more of that around the state to allow people to not get the runaround, to not have to hold up and wait months getting permits and permissions and things straightened up so that they can go ahead with the job. You, Mr. Chair, operate your own business, and you know how these delays affect you financially when you've got money tied up and trying to get loans and everything scheduled around permits, and you know, you get waylaid and held off. The interest rates go up, the money that was available disappears, and all kinds of things happen in the process of delay. And so I would encourage you to accept House Bill 2866, A and Gross, as it is, and not add either one of these amendments to it.
Senator, are you familiar with the amendments to the military?
A little bit.
Is your surveyor that you talked about, Senator Fisher?
Yes, he's familiar with it, and he does not support them.
Either one of them?
Either one of them.
No further questions. Thank you very much, Senator Fisher. We have Brian. And I'm sorry, I can't quite make out that last name. That's Weigert. Jack Burrow.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Brian Weigert. I'm a licensed land surveyor in private practice. I currently own a surveying firm in the metropolitan area. I am an active member of Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon and past chairman. I am in support of the bill with the A4 amendments attached to it. The way that it sits without these amendments, there are subtle changes that are happening on both the subdivisions and partition plats that are going to make it harder for us to or for the people to understand where their corners are going to be on the adjoining properties that are being developed. One of the problems that I see when we only monument the exterior angle points of the corners is the fact that there is going to be, you are not going to be able to see any encroachments that are going to happen, fence fence line's over the line that you think is your corner or property line, or maybe it is not. Regarding the monuments that...
Excuse me, I've got to ask a question at that point.
Yes.
If you've surveyed the angled points...
Yes.
Then you've got a straight line between those points. Why is that a problem in encroachment?
You have surveyed your property and the adjoining property, and there are fence lines. Many times there are fence lines of the developed property adjacent to the one you're going to develop that will fall within your boundary.
That's easily observable, is it not, if you've got a straight line?
If you're in an area where there's a lot of trees and brush, and your monuments are 1,000 feet apart, it is not easily observable for the individual that currently lives there.
Okay, thank you.
The boundary corner, setting the exterior boundary corners of all the lots that are going to be within the subdivision will serve notice to the individuals that are adjoining the property, because the majority of those are going to be within sight of each other, and they'll be able to see where it's being done. The fact that these corners may be removed at some point due to construction, for the most part, your utilities do not run down the back lot lines. They run along the streets, which therefore these exterior corners would not be affected at all. Being able to have a permanent monument is very important in all these cases. The county surveyors have always been readily available to talk to individuals about any problems that may arise. I've been involved in a couple different things where the county surveyor has brought points to my attention regarding how I resolve the boundary versus what the title report says or what the interpretations of the deeds are. And I welcome those because it keeps both my client and myself out of any problems down the road. And I welcome the fact that they are reviewing my work, and it saves a lot on affidavits later on down the line. Thank you.
My name is Jack Burt, Chairman. My name is Jack Thoreau. I'm a private surveyor. I practice in Albany, Oregon. And I basically am against the legislation that it has come before you. I feel that we have let you down through not properly going through these issues in our professional organization and our opportunity to work with the county surveyors. You're being asked to pass things on that we can't agree on ourselves. There has been opportunities for it to occur. I think that when it went through the House committee, basically they said, meet amongst yourselves, work this out, and come back. I think without that happening, you're not getting good legislation before you so that you can pass it on. And what I'm fearful of is that there are the control issue that they talk, it really just comes down to a matter of control. There is a segment within the private survey practice who feels that the county surveyors should not be making comments to them or having them do certain things on their plat that they, in their professional judgment, the private surveyor, they feel should have the opportunity to turn it, to submit it, have it filed. And I know that there can be frustrating moments in a private surveyor's life, but in my 21 years of practice, I have never experienced a situation where I have been asked to do anything but do a good job, have it checked and reviewed. They have found things that have not been right, and I've had an opportunity to correct it and to fix it. I don't take issue with the job that they're doing. I think they're protecting the public, and I think that we as private surveyors have an obligation to represent our owners, the abutting people that we're surveying against, and the public, too. And I'm afraid that in a way, we've let this become a power struggle within the organization of county surveyors and private surveyors. There are good things within this bill, and I think there has been short-circuited. We haven't, because of the struggle of our inability to get together and talk about it, it has driven a wedge, and then the ability to talk out some of the good points that could have been resolved and made better, that has just basically stopped that communication flow. Now, in my opinion, the House committee asked that it be worked out and compromised and brought back to you in some shape that we all could stand up here and say, yes, we're supporting it. That did not occur. I would ask that you would send a message to the professional land surveyors and ask them to work these issues out, come back with well-thought-out legislation, and appear back before you with some semblance of a majority feeling. There was a meeting. This has been the most divisive issue that I have seen in my 25 years. It is splitting the private and the professional land surveyors. There was a meeting last Saturday. It was a special meeting conducted to speak to side issues that have come out of this. It was not my perception that the vote down there was a mandate to approve this legislation as it has been presented to you and it is going through the legislature. I think that the private surveyor has a tendency to think that, well, Oz Fields, the Board of Engineering Examiners, can fix the problem. I have observed there are a good board of people, of citizens of the state, of engineers and surveyors and private citizens who make up that board. That is a tough job to then have a complaint come to them and try to work through that in a timely manner. To be honest with you, I don't think that it has really worked all of that well in all of the 21 years that I have observed. It's a very cumbersome, very difficult issue to work out. I would like for the private surveyors, the professional surveyors of Oregon, to get their act together, for us to work with Oz Fields to make sure that we have an efficient way of reviewing and dealing with complaints that are brought for you, rather than, and then come back to you and say, yes, we in good faith can push this legislation, and not be fearful that the citizens or the private the surveys that are going to be filed are going to really not represent true and correct and good work that I think would tend to creep into the records. So I would just ask that the committee basically not pass it on with an approval or a request that it be heard. I think it's time for the profession to get back, get to working together. There are good minds on both sides of this, but we haven't done our job for you. And I would ask that you would not pass it on. Give us an opportunity to work these things out and come back next time.
Thank you.
Nettleton, Bob Nettleton and Robert Hogden.
Chair Starr, my name is Bob Nettleton. I'm Marion County Surveyor. I've come to speak against the bill as presented. I do support some of the amendments, both of the amendments. Couple of things. Presented some written testimony, and in that, attached to it at the back is a copy of a subdivision that was recorded in our office and actually with the county clerk. And in that document, because of the current law of requiring setting monuments along the exterior of the subdivision, when the crew for this company was out setting the monuments, they set some monuments on the other side of the fence, and when you look at the sheet that blow up of lots 1 through 7, you can see that those monuments were over the fence less than a foot, and when they set those and the property owner came out and basically ran them off, claiming that less than a foot. So to resolve that, what we did is have the surveyor
So on the plat that was recorded, that area that was ownership of in dispute. And that was key. If the angle points, which would be if the other key, would only have been set because of the landscaping and trees and all those sort of things out there, there's no way that any individual could have stood on one corner and actually seen to the other. So the current law works in that particular case. And also, speaking to the issue of the fact that monuments 7 and 8 interior are destroyed when utilities are put in, I would speak to the fact that if they are being dug out by construction, then the construction companies are trespassing on the adjoiners, which is an issue. And also, speaking to comment made about one of the counties down south where the county surveyor was placed by election, it's my observation that the current law works. You know, there are issues with individuals. Even if this was to pass, there is going to be some counties that will pass legislation locally by ordinance and that sort of thing, which is more restrictive than state law. So you know, I think current law works. I would support the bill if it was amended with the proposed amendments. And if you have any questions on anything else.
Well, back to your thoughts here that you've given us. You indicated that if the angle corners alone were identified, that you wouldn't know if you'd encroached on the fence, and that the fence appears to run the full length.
Well, it's not quite full length. If you look, it's on the larger flat that shows all the lots. It doesn't run through lots 8, 9, or 10. And being out on the ground in that particular case, there was quite a bit of trees and that sort of thing in that area that would have obscured that view.
Thank you.
Chairman Stark, I'm Robert Hogan. I've been a practicing surveyor in Oregon since 1965, both with industry, private practice, and with county government. I'm presently Multnomah County surveyor. I have some written testimony here that addresses some of the concerns I have with 2866A. I think 2866-4 amendments address my concerns and ask that you support the bill with the -4 amendments. I'm a member of the Pioneer Chapter of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon, and we represent about 38% of the membership of PLSO, and the existing 2866 was major portions of that was proposed by our organization, but being that Pioneer Chapter and Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon are a Senate-type system that have some small chapters that have just as much voice as the others, they were overruled. I think there's between Pioneer Chapter and Willamette Chapter, there's over 60% of the membership that opposed major portions of this bill. In Multnomah County, we review probably more plats than any other county in the state. We seem to review it in a timely manner and don't have any trouble at all with any of the private surveyors. If they have a problem, they come and talk to us and we resolve it. I think the existing law has worked real well. I think 2866 with the 4 amendments will still work fine, and it's got a few good points that could help too, and I ask you to support that as amended. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I don't know that.
Thank you very much. You can say it. Bob Giselle and Ray Wilson.
Chairman Starrs, committee. My name is Ray Wilson. I'm a Benton County surveyor, but I'm not here in that capacity. I'm here as a private land surveyor. I've been a surveyor for approximately 20 years. I am the past chair of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. And as House Bill 2866A engrossed is in front of you now, I am against the bill as it is written. I think there's a lot of good information in the bill. As you've heard, I'm not going to reiterate all this. But a couple of the issues, 92-100, which has to do with the county surveyors, I think that should be taken out of the bill. And one of the reasons I say that is, as the past chair of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon, which has approximately 600 members, the past chair and the present chair, we have had a standing, request from any of the private surveyors in our organization that if they have any conflict with a county surveyor that they can't resolve, to bring it to the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon, and we will contact the county surveyors and try to work that out. And that's been a standing offer for 2 years, and we have yet to receive any complaints at all. It appears that the private surveyor and the county surveyor are working out their differences until it comes to legislation issues. But I think the PLSO, in there, I was a member of the PLSO committee until recently, and I'm not a member of that any longer. They were instructed by, I believe, the House side to get together and work out their differences. The meeting we had last Saturday, the first part of the meeting, was strictly whether to keep our lobbyists. It didn't have anything to do with this bill. They had some subsequent meetings after that in which the county surveyors met with the Professional Land Surveyors Legislative Committee, and we offered some amendments to the bill and some concessions. And I think these concessions were middle ground. I think they serve the purpose well for both sides, and I believe that's reflected in the A4 amendment. Another issue that keeps popping up is the exterior monumentation. In the A4 amendment, if it says that you will monument the exterior boundary, except if there are areas where these pins are going to be destroyed, if there's going to be construction, bulldozers, what have you out there, if the pins are going to be destroyed, the A in growth bill says you don't have to set those at this time. You can post monument. You can set them later. So there's a compromise on that. Like I said, there's a lot of good things inside the bill. There's still some ambiguities. So my recommendation would be to not pass the A in growth, but to support the A4 amendments. I think that's some happy medium, and we could all walk away winners. Any questions?
But I listen.
Thank you.
Chair Starr, another member of the Senate. My name is Bob Ezell. I've been county surveyor of Lane County for 20 years. I'm representing myself as county surveyor, but also Lane County. They authorized me to speak in opposition to this House bill. But since their authorization, there's been many amendments, and there has been coming to the middle ground here. And I would hate to see this, all the good parts of this bill die if we can't come to the middle ground. I want to speak a little bit about the 45-day to 180-day situation. I want to give you a real-life situation where a lady called me, and she's trying to get a house addition on her house, and she couldn't get the surveyor to answer her phone calls or return her letters. So she was desperate because she had a contractor and trying to get the work done. And I think that the proposal that was brought to us by the county surveyors in a meeting we had in January, where we met with the legislative committee of PLSO and the legislative committee of OASIS, we talked at that time about circumstances beyond the control of the surveyor that they could not set their monuments. And we talked about bringing that kind of language into the bill. And that would, that kind of language, or what is proposed in the amendment, would be acceptable. I really think and feel difficulty for allowing a survey where they set monuments establishing boundaries to go past the 45 days without some good reason. And the language that's proposed in 2866 does not take and have that good language in there. Moving on to Section 3 having to do with 92060, I wanted to point out, this is new information that hasn't been brought to this committee, is that the existing law has been in effect since 1973. That is, you have to set the exterior angle points, and you also have to set the exterior lot corners on the subdivision. And so one has to ask the question, after 26 years, why do we need to change this law? And I'm at a loss. I have not heard one good explanation of why we need to change this law if you're not set to the exterior lot corners. As I already pointed out to you in several discussions, it provides effective notice for the adjoining lot owner who is adjoining the subdivision plat. And it was interesting in looking at some minutes on the House floor when we debated this, and I heard from Representative Morgan and Representative King, who spoke here, about the destruction of the survey monuments because of landscaping or equipment working in the flat and so forth. And as already mentioned to you by Bob Nettleton from Marion County, in order for them to take and destroy those monuments, they'd have to be trespassing. And so I don't see that as a valid argument. What we offered, the county surveyors have offered, and what we also agreed at the meeting with the legislative group in back in January, I believe, was there are situations where setting monuments in the exterior is not good practice. And I'll give you an example is where a developer has a large tract of land, and he is doing subdivisions by, he'll do one subdivision, and then he'll do a first edition. So that developer may own, for example, two sides of a plat. And in those circumstances where he owns the adjoining land and there may be construction, he may want to put his excavation from the street, for example, on the lot. And we offer for them, to agree with the TILSO request, that there be a provision in those particular special circumstances. And that's included in the proposed amendment. There was talk about, well, a person can submit a bond on his post-monument plat, which will ensure that the survey is completed. And in Lane County, in the last 10 years, there's been 35 subdivision plats that have never been completed, even though they're bonded. And the difficulty is, if you will, trying to step between the two businesses. You have the developer and you have the surveyor, and they have a business arrangement, you know. How do you step between them and they can say, well, I'm going to take over, and I'm going to take and hire a surveyor, or we're going to have the county surveyor staff run this monument? There's a tremendous difficulty in that. You first have to take and do a whole survey of the whole plat so you can determine what monuments are good that you can hold to. So this is almost an unworkable situation, but I wanted to take and emphasize that it doesn't work as good as represented. In Jackson County, there's an equal number of subdivision plats that have never been completed because of, for one reason or another. So taking into account that there are subdivisions that are not completed, and there is no reason, for example, for a developer in developing a subdivision to tear out exterior monuments because he would be trespassing, then I suggest that this is a poorly written bill. And I oppose that particular section as in 2866A. I wanted to speak a little bit about 92-100, and here it is proposed by TILSO legislative group that we limit the review of the subdivision plat to ORS 92 and 209, and Representative Morgan circumvented some of those conditions. What the difficulty is the discretionary judgment of looking at a plat, for example, and you observe that, for example, that the west line of a plat is a road, and the road is controlled by a donation land claim line, and that the surveyor has not found any monuments or represented any monumentation that line has ever been set up. And so then the survey is incomplete. And so it may be that the surveyor has it on the work map in his office, but he forgot to put them on the plat. But nonetheless, looking at it, just by visual observation, you can see that this west boundary is incomplete. And so then, if you just would limit yourself to 92 and 209, you would not be able to take a step forward and say to the surveyor, you need to do some more work on the west boundary here because you haven't established the west boundary. And so that's taken away the discretionary judgment of the county surveyor, where And I know that this is kind of an aggravation to the private surveyor for a county surveyor to tell them that they haven't done a complete job. But as a matter of fact, in a very small percentage of the time, this does in fact occur. The other thing about the limitations of 92 and 209 is a real example that happened to Lane County just on May 28th, where Lane County was presented a tort claim, and that has to do with a fence being within the plat. And I noticed this fence in the plat, and I took steps I felt that would improve. For example, there was a 2-acre minimum, so I made sure that the surveyor or the landowner ended up with 2 acres outside of this fence that was encroaching into the plat. I asked that the fence agreements be discussed with the adjoiners, and that happened except for one landowner who would not take an agree to the fence line. So I didn't want to stop the plat at that point, and so then I took and signed off on the plat. There now is a tort claim against Lane County. It's not against the developer, and it's not against the plat surveyor. It's against Lane County. And so you might ask, well, why is that? And the common slang word is deep pocket. Lane County has a deep pocket. Now, whether this thing will go forward and we'll have to have depositions and things of that nature, which is a great cost to the county, then that remains to be seen. But I think the point is that if you just limit the county surveyor to ORS 92 and 209, then you're taking away discretionary judgment that we currently have, and I don't think that we should be limited just to those two particular chapters. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Ken Bauer? John?
Okay.
Timachek?
Senator Starr, Chair Starr, committee members. I'm going to try to keep this short and not hash out what's already been done. I don't support the bill as it is now, but do support the A4 amendments. Senator Fisher said that the Douglas County Surveyor in 2 years has straightened things out. That's under the current law. I'm Ken Bauer, the Washington County Surveyor. I'm sorry. He's working under the current law, and it works well. So I don't know what the problem, why he supports the changes. To discuss encroachments a little bit, they do cause a cloud on the title. And when the title companies are aware of it, they will put an exception in the title report, very likely. And then the lenders will see that, and then there's a very good possibility of loan problems. So to catch these encroachments in advance and get them resolved is a tremendous public benefit. To let them go could also cause some arguments among neighbors. We've had the sheriff's deputy come to our office a few times looking for a record of survey to see if one has been done because two neighbors fought it out. One neighbor may have started tearing down another one's fence. So it's very, very important to have these issues resolved up front. And like I said, I will support the A4 amendments, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Chairman Starr and committee members, my name is John Nemechek. I'm the Colt County Surveyor, and I pretty much agree with what's been said by the previous county surveyor, so I won't dwell on all the horror stories. But I would like to comment on kind of a general overview of the situation. There seems to be disagreement between the county surveyors and the private surveyors on what is considered control. I'd use another term. I would use authority. And this is the authority given to the county surveyor by ORS and also by resolution by the local governing body. I think in most cases that's overlooked. Some counties have, through an ordinance given to the power given to them through the ordinance by the governing body or the commissioners or the city council, give them the authority to do boundary checks or boundary resolutions required in processing subdivision plats. I believe that some of the private surveyors take offense to that, and it is over and above what's required by ORS. So this is not a power trip by the county surveyor, it's the authority given to him. I do agree with Jack Burrell, who testified earlier, that this is a poor showing of the profession of getting together and coming up with a mutual agreement of a resolution to better perfect their profession and also serve the public and protect their welfare. It is a very poor showing, and I would suggest that maybe we go back to the drawing table and start over the next session. That's my input. Thank you.
Question. The bill as it presented, with or without the amendments, we have a session again in 2 years. Do you think this adoption of this, that it would move you toward working together, or would it further divide the professional and the county surveyors?
Well, in order to come up with some legislation that is good for the profession and good mainly for the public, we'd have to get together and talk. Personally, it's not being done. And it would have to happen in order to go forward.
And Senator Starr, I don't think we had a lot of time to do it. It was pretty short in this session.
The question I asked, I don't think you spoke to. The question I asked was if we pass the bill as it is, you've got 2 years before we meet again. Is it going to compel you to work together to develop something that's more workable, or is it going to further divide the two camps?
And that's including the proposed amendment?
No, I'm saying without the amendment.
I think it's going to exacerbate the problem.
I think it's going to.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
I would concur.
Yeah. Any further questions?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one other witness signed up, I believe. Barber?
Chair Starr, members of the committee, my name is Doug Barber. I represent Peace Health Medical Group, Sacred Heart Hospital in Eugene. You may wonder why we are testifying on a surveyor's bill. I'm wondering why we got pulled into this as well. Our concern is the -A7 amendments. On lines 14 to 16, it talks about up to a $10 surcharge on all documents filed with the county. Sacred Heart Hospital files nearly 1,000 medical service liens every year. That's how the hospital collects payment from insurance companies after traffic accidents. We pay a $5 fee for each of those liens, which covers the cost of the county clerk. On a bill that was passed earlier this session, House Bill 2139, an $11 surcharge was added to that cost. So now instead of paying $5, we'll be paying $16. this would add another up to $10 charge on top of that. So instead of paying $5, which is the cost, we would be paying $26. We don't see any reason that hospitals should be drawn into this debate, why we should be taxed to fund the clerks over and above the fees we already pay, which cover the costs of the liens that we file. So we would strongly oppose the A7 amendment. Thank you very much.
I don't have any.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, do you want us to come back? And
yes, I do. I'd like to have a response since you've brought the bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to respond. I'd first like to say that we could have had three or four rooms of folks here to testify, and I thought that being into the session, the last thing you wanted to have is hours and hours of testimony, which is why we didn't bring hundreds of people here to testify, and why we're just doing this short testimony today. It's not any indication of our strength, I assure you.
Chairman Starr, members of the committee, I'd just like to say that as part of being the chairman or chairman-elect of the board of directors, I took it upon myself to attend at least one meeting of every chapter in the state. And there's 9 chapters of PLSO scattered across the state. And I think I have a lot different perception than most other people do, and as far as I know, I'm the only PLSO member that's done that. It's what surveyors across the state think about legislation and what we're proposing. I agree with our lobbyists that we could pack the room if that's what we thought you wanted, but we thought for sure that you didn't. When we first started this process 2 years ago, we decided we would not have a joint committee of OACs and PLSO, that it would be a PLSO committee, but we always welcome input from any member or any other person that would provide constructive input to our committee. I'm surprised today to hear a few people come forward that I've never heard of before, who have never provided input to us that are asking you to kill this bill. I decided, and I talked to the county surveyors and met with us last Saturday, that as part of my job as chairman, I will appoint a professional practice committee to be made up of professional land surveyors in private practice and those in county government to try to develop a professional practice guidelines for the state of Oregon, and particularly to work on these problems. The dispute resolution process, quite frankly, as far as I know, hasn't worked. In the 2 or 3 cases that have been tried, it just fell apart because there is no mandate, there is no legislation, there is no hammer or law that makes it a workable solution. The real authority for professional practice in this state lies with Osfields, and that's where it should stay. I would like to thank you for letting me comment today, and I would hope that you'll pass the bill and give us the opportunity over the next 2 years to try to make it work, and if it doesn't work, we can come back and amend it at that time.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make just a couple of comments if I might. In response, you've heard several people say that the A4 amendment is a good compromise. If you read the A4 amendments, what they say every time is approval by the county surveyor, approval by the county surveyor, approval by the county surveyor. And I get this, Mr. Chair, you've had some experience personally, I know, with plan review. And I guess the situation would be similar is if you went into plan review, and not only did they check and see if your plans met the code, but they wanted to check that your handwriting was good. And they wanted to say, well, you know, the windows I don't like very much, or I don't like the angle of the roof that you've designed. We think that right now there's no guidelines on what the county surveyor can say yes or no. There's no criterion for them to say this is satisfactory, this is not satisfactory, and that makes up the problems. And the ORF is very clear. Here's what you have to have, here's what you don't have to have. My suggestion is we should pass this bill, and with no amendments, I think that there's going to be some things that are going to shake out. I think there may be, as somebody said, we may come back next session and add to that ORF section additional things, additional authorities and additional criteria for the county surveyors, but I think those will be circumscribed, not just wide open. regarding this 45-day to 180-day, again, what they want is to always have you go back to the county surveyor to make that choice. We think that the person who's on the ground, who's actually doing the work, has a better grasp of what the necessity is for himself, whether he needs to take more time or not. And I could run you lots and lots of examples of where things happen where you need more than 45 days. And we shouldn't have to go to back to mama and say, is it okay for me to, you know, extend this period? We think that's what the professionals are licensed to do. We think that this bill is a good bill for making the professional surveyors act like professionals. I think there are always going to be some tensions between the county surveyors and the private surveyors. It's not going to stop by having this bill passed or having this bill fail. That's going to go on. But I think passing this bill will get us in a position where we are relatively equal with the county surveyors and allow us to negotiate as equals into the future.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Appreciate that. We have the end of the public hearing. I'll conclude our public hearing on House Bill 2866. We've got a representative here on another bill. We're going to invite him to come forward. We're going to open a hearing on this bill. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3432.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 3432 came out of the House through the Civil Judiciary Committee. What the bill is essentially designed to do, as you may remember in, and I'm waiting for my bill file to show up here, but either January or February of this year, the Attorney General's Office issued an opinion, a formal opinion to the legislature, which essentially said that the Government Standards and Practices Commission was constitutionally prohibited from making a determination with respect to whether or not a legislator makes a is in violation of their statutes or the way the statutes are written with respect to declaring conflicts of interest. I don't know if you remember the Attorney General's opinion, and when it comes, I'll give you the specific date. But it essentially said that it makes it a violation of the Constitutional Speech and Debate Clause for the Government Standards and Practices Commission to weigh in on that, and that conflicts of interest issues are matters essentially for the legislature to police themselves, and that the Government Standards and Practices Commission could not do that. What this bill essentially does is it alters the mechanism by which the Government Standards and Practices Commission must now respond to conflicts of interest complaints against legislators in the process. So what this bill really does is makes essentially technical corrections to the statute to make it compliant with the Attorney General's opinion with respect to these issues. And this matter was requested, the opinion was requested by legislative leadership of the Attorney General prior to the beginning of the session to clarify those issues. So all this bill does is essentially says that when a person were to make a complaint against a legislator for failure to properly declare conflict of interest, this is the mechanism that the Government Standards and Practices Commission would have to use. And it essentially requires that they first determine whether or not it is a conflict of interest complaint. If it is, then they have to dismiss the complaint. The individual then is responsible to essentially come to the legislative body and make a complaint to the legislative body, and the legislative body is the one that is responsible for managing that process. So it's currently a violation of the Oregon Constitution for them to actually handle a conflicts of interest declaration. Thank you very much. And I'll tell you, just for the record, Mr. Chairman, the date of the Attorney General's opinion on this matter is February 24th of this year. The question that was asked was, does each chamber of the Legislative Assembly have exclusive authority to investigate and sanction its members for failing to declare or for inadequately declaring on the floor or in committee an actual or potential conflict of interest as required by ORS 244.120 sub 1A? And the short answer given by the AG was yes, under Article 4, Section 9 of the Oregon Constitution, each chamber of the Legislative Assembly has the exclusive authority to adjudicate a member of that chamber for speech that takes place within the performance of the member's legislative function, including the member's failure to make a required disclosure of potential or actual conflicts of interest. This authority has not been delegated to any other body, including the Government Standards and Practices Commission. So what HB 3432 does is essentially fixes the current statutory language to make the Government Standards and Practices Commission's handling of a conflict of interest complaint against a legislator compliant with the language in the opinion by the Attorney General's office.
I have a question.
Question.
So then, if someone says they didn't declare a conflict of interest, and then the legislature says, you know, they didn't, then it says they didn't, then does it go back to the ethics people to figure out something?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shannon, I don't believe that it would, and this is a matter that, at least on the House side, I've been discussing with House leadership the need, frankly, for the House to adopt rules, and some draft rules have been prepared for the adoption of the House to essentially set up a panel that would receive and investigate complaints for failure to properly declare conflicts of interest.
Okay,
not unlike the panel we have for example, sexual harassment complaints, mm-hmm. At least on the House side. I don't know, frankly, how the Senate panel is set up to deal with those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
So then why do we need the Ethics Commission?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, there are matters of which a complaint could be filed. For example, and I'll just mention, you know, the most heinous abuse would be, for example, a bribery claim against a member. That's not a speech matter. That matter could be handled legitimately by the
That would be fine, though.
But there could also be an ethics complaint filed, and that matter could be handled by the Government Standards and Practice. There are many other things that...
Right, the private gain to official.
There are many things that a legislator could do that might be violative of the rules, which the Government Standards and Practices Commission would appropriately handle. The reason that a conflict of interest declaration is not a matter within their purview is that violates the speech and debate clause protection that's granted to each chamber. So it's really a separation of powers issue to a great degree.
Yeah.
On the line 20, first page of the bill, where it says the commission's own action is a member of the legislative assembly. Was it by design, max or left out language, or was it the time of the alleged abuse or misfeasance or offense?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turnell, at least to my knowledge, it was not by design, and you raise an interesting question. It would be my belief, I guess I'd have to pose this question to legislative counsel, but it seems to me that the speech that a legislator makes, even if they're not currently, if they were a legislator at the time that they made it, they would still be, frankly, subject to the constitutional provision that would have been protected speech at the time it was uttered. I guess maybe the issue would more likely than not be moot, however, but it's an interesting question, and I guess I'd have to run by and think through with legislative counsel. But certainly I don't think there was any design or discussion in the House committee as to that issue.
If the malfeasance or what have you is severe enough, then it's conceivable that the legislator could promptly resign and be kicked to avoid any kind of further embarrassment by an investigation or that sort of thing. I just wondered if that was considered.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turnell, I believe that the body would still have a responsibility and the ability to determine any kind of public sanction it wanted, even on a member who is no longer sitting, albeit the penalties that one might assess there could only be pretty much what you wanted to say publicly about the matter. I mean, you know, they don't have the body doesn't have the ability, I think, to put anyone in chains or anything like that. But no, it wasn't by design. The matter was not discussed in the House committee.
House 58-1 in the House.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And nobody in opposition today?
No, I don't believe so. I think, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I think that everybody recognizes that once the Attorney General issued the opinion, essentially the opinion becomes, because it's an official Attorney General opinion and not an advisory opinion, the effect of the opinion becomes binding on the Government Standards and Practices Commission at the time that it's issued. They must follow the Attorney General's opinion in their compliance with this matter. What we were trying to do with House Bill 3432 was to essentially make the statutes comply so the average citizen would understand it, and frankly, so the Government Standards and Practices Commission would not have statutes that were in conflict with an Attorney General's opinion as to how they were supposed to handle a complaint against the legislator for failure to properly declare a conflict of interest. That's the issue that we were trying to solve with the bill, was to make them essentially match up. And that's why I believe, Mr. Chairman, that there isn't anybody in opposition to it, because they recognize this isn't an effort for the legislature to get around anything. It's essentially doing what the Attorney General has mandated that we do based on the opinion.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I will help move this bill forward on this thing, and I would like to maybe follow up with LC on my concern. Yeah. Just to be able to address on the floor. If
you bet. You bet. And I'd be happy to work with you on that, Senator Carno, to find out the answer.
Thank you. Close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 3432.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3432 to the floor for the Bachar Foundation.
Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 3432 to the floor for the Bachar Foundation. Further comments? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Chairman.
Aye.
Senator Tarno.
Aye.
Senator
Scott. Aye. MC is necessary majority. House Bill 3432 moved to the floor of the DuPass recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Carrier?
I'll carry, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tarno will carry. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that one.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill
2866. I move House Bill 2866 to the floor, to the floor with the due pass.
Senator Shannon has moved House Bill 2866 in gross to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator
Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Carney. Aye. Aye. I received necessary majority. House Bill 2866 moves forth to do pass recommendation. Senator Shannon will carry.
All right.
We closed that work session, and we're timing. Where are we? No, we're ready.
Into 679.
We can do 679 only. Let's see.
Yeah.
We have it in our possession?
Yes. Yeah. I do.
You do?
Okay. I have amendments, too.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 679. And we have Grover Simmons.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Grover Simmons, and I represent adult foster homes. As you all know, those are private residences which take up to 5 frail and elderly people into their home and take care of them on a 24-hour basis. The key problem which Senate Bill 679 addresses is that a person can file a completely false and unfounded complaint with the Senior and Disabled Services Division against an adult foster home, and after the matter has been fully investigated and shown to be completely untrue, there's no way to hold the complainant accountable for this false complaint.
You're speaking to the Dash 2 Amendment or the bill?
To the amended bill.
The bill hadn't been amended yet.
to the dash, I'm speaking to the dash two, beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Is that
that help
out of order or
that's,
you know,
that's fine.
Okay. It is the dash two amendment.
That's what we need to be clear on the record.
And my printed testimony relates to the dash two. But the key issue again is the fact that a completely untrue and unfounded complaint can be lodged against an adult foster home, and there are no consequences of that for having made that false complaint and wrongful conduct. There is complete immunity under the current law for that activity. Senate Bill 679-2 simply reverses the situation and says that if a person knowingly and intentionally submits a complaint or testimony, they shall not have immunity from civil or criminal liability. The industry met with the Senior Services Division and agreed to a second sentence, which they insisted upon, and that is, staff, residents, family, and others shall not be prohibited, discouraged, or in any way intimidated from making complaints. Close quote. We believe that that is balanced and fair language. It establishes an expectation and a standard of truthfulness in public affairs, while at the same time, in our opinion, it does not have a chilling effect on the filing of legitimate complaints. Being able to fabricate a story, then rely upon the statutory law for immunity protection, in our view, is just not right. The idea of not being held accountable for what you say and do just seems unacceptable on its face. And that's the essence of the bill. Appreciate very much your hearing it. It has several years of history behind it, but that's the nub of the problem.
Question?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
David Nebel, Jacqueline Zimmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nebel. I work for the Oregon Law Center. I'm appearing today on behalf of low-income clients of the Oregon Law Center, also on behalf of the Citizens Coalition for Quality Long-Term Care. I'm appearing in opposition to the Dash 2 amendments because I think that current law addresses the problem that Mr. Simmons and the proponents of this amendment are attempting to address with this bill. If you look at current law, which is on page 2 of the amendments, lines 9 through 13, it says, anyone participating in good faith in the making of a complaint who has reasonable grounds for the making the complaint shall have immunity. That also means that anyone who makes a complaint that's not in good faith or not with a reasonable basis to make it does not have immunity.
Excuse me. If that is so, why is saying so important to you?
Well, I think the problem, Senator, with this amendment is that I think it unwittingly raises the bar for if Mr. Simmons' clients want to be able to be better able to hold people accountable who make false complaints, I don't think this is the mechanism to do it, because I think this inserts a second series of requirements that they would have to show in order to press a complaint. They would have to show that the complaint is not made in good faith or is not made on a reasonable basis, and that the complaint was made knowing it was false and it was intentionally made knowing that it was false. So I don't see what the point of this bill is other than unless it's going to be misused by providers who want to discourage people from making legitimate complaints.
Question? Just briefly, Mr. Chair. David, you've been watching the slap suit legislation as it's gone through the process here recently.
Mr. Chair, Senator Turner, I have been watching it from a distance.
One of the issues here was this little word of immunity and what impact it has on any kind of adjudication or process that involves frivolous or unfounded statements or things of this sort. And so I think that what I see in this with the dash two amendments to this is the last statement from lines 15 on through, a complainant knowingly and intentionally submits a false complaint does not have immunity. I think that's one of the keys to this thing, whereas immunity is mentioned in the subsection 7 above, is also addressed in the lower portion, the highlighted language, where it's specific that they don't have immunity if it's with intent, mostly, and intentionally submits a false complaint.
Mr. Chair, Senator Turner, I agree. I think that's right, but I think that I can't imagine a complaint that is made intentionally and knowingly, and the person knows that it's false when it's made. I can't imagine a complaint like that was made in good faith or that was made on a reasonable basis. I don't see how this adds anything to the law, and I think actually this confuses the law. I think an attorney who is looking at this, who is representing an adult foster care provider, who comes to the attorney and says, "Help me out here. Somebody has lied about my adult foster facility," would look at this and say, "This language is very confusing." Because there are two separate standards for immunity set forth about the same kinds of complaint in the same section of the statute. Thank you.
May I say something?
Yes.
I don't see the nursing homeowner that was here from Sidle before that really lived through this and actually. And this language, particularly hurts the scale of human resources. And I support the same, and I support it now. It made a lot of sense, this language, because the other didn't cover a woman that didn't want to do certain work and left and intentionally caused a bunch of trouble that they never prosecuted because they realized that it wasn't true. And I think the language is needed.
Mr. Chair, good afternoon. Jacqueline Zimmer, Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. I don't know if you're confused, but I think a lot of people, when they look at this issue, find this language to be confusing. And I prefer to read my statutes for some clarity. And I'll admit that I don't have a law background, but I'm not exactly sure why you need the second paragraph when you have the first one in place. I know enough to know that the first one, I believe, handles this issue. But the part about this that concerns us is that we want people to call in and report their observations or things that they see that aren't right in adult foster homes. We think that overall it's a great serves a great function, great purpose. Most of the people that are in it are excellent, and we want to keep it that way. We want to keep the standards really high, and we prefer to have people call in and say, "I saw something; it doesn't look right to me." Okay, and if they're not in the business or they're not in the day to day, they may not understand why something's operating or how it operates. And we need to check that out and get everybody straight on a complaint. Like you may say, "Oh, I didn't see anybody get their meds while I was there." Well, I mean, that's an extreme example, but we would check that out, and then we would find out, well, they do the meds from 4 to 6 or whatever. And we just need to have everybody understand that people are safe in these facilities. one of the things that happens, there are some providers who have, for some reason or another, they do not have a good relationship with the people that work for them. And it could be the people that work for them, and it could be the providers. And I think that there is some retaliation that does go on. But overall, we really want to know when something looks odd to family members and friends that are checking on folks. Now, imagine if you were an aunt of somebody who was in one of these homes and you saw something that you didn't think was right and you filed a complaint. It turned out to be unfounded. As you file the complaint, or you talk to the adult foster care homeowner and you say, I see a problem with this, I'm going to report it, they can say to you, because of this language, go ahead. And if it turns out to be false, we're going to sue you.
Excuse me. No, they can't.
Yes, they can.
No, they can't.
It's intentionally. And what makes your case really strong that you came in with some actual? You are dealing with this could, should, would, might. And the other people came in with actual cases where it was, they knew it wasn't true, but they just did it to get them in trouble.
I understand that there is some of that goes on. Right. But if I've got a relative in a foster home and I see something that's not right, and I understand that it's possible that if it's not proved to be true, that I could be sued for it, would I report it?
Now, you can ask questions, but you can't say this happened when you know it didn't. That's all this says, is you cannot intentionally...
It says you don't have immunity.
That's right.
It keeps some people from reporting things that they see that don't look right to them. And if you were an employee or a former employee, you didn't make much money, would you report something that you saw as you went out the door because you were no longer working there? Maybe, maybe not.
You could ask a question, Ms. Zimmer, but you couldn't intentionally lie.
We think this is intimidating language.
Okay.
We think it prevents people. It will prevent people from reporting things.
Thank you.
If that happened, and we passed this, and it's signed by the governor, then next session or an interim, we need to come and show where it's being abused. My opinion.
Thank you very much. We're going to close public hearing and open up the discussion.
Okay. I move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 679.
Senator Shannon has moved the -2 amendments to Bill 679. Discussion? Objection? Hear none, so ordered.
Okay, I move Senate Bill 679 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Shannon has moved Senate Bill 679 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 679 is moved for the due pass recommendation. Senator Shannon, will you carry that, please? We close that, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2700. We desire the intention of the chair that we move House Bill 2700 to Senate Public Affairs Committee.
Okay.
Need a motion?
Oh, I move House Bill 2700 to Public Affairs Committee. Senate Public Affairs Committee, what? Without recommendation. Okay.
Senator Shannon has moved House Bill 2700 to Senate Public Affairs Committee. Discussion? Any opposition? Not supported.
That's it.
We are through for the day, I guess. We don't have necessary members for reconsideration, so we are going to adjourn the Senate Rules and Elections Committee.
Are there any meetings scheduled for this meeting?